about what you're doing. Later on, switch on the TV. They give me the news, they give half truths to me. They give us wise, they feed us lies.
Uncensored Radio Free America.
Rick Adams is on.
And I guess we're on. Here we are. Rick Adams with you. And this evening tonight, I believe we're going to be talking with Eustace Mullins. Yes, indeed. In just a few moments, and look forward to that. As ever and always, Eustace Mullins is quite a prolific author. He's about 103 now. But he's up there. And he's about 108. Is that what my producer said? Okay. Just kidding. But he's got the mind of a youngster and the vitality of a youngster. And he certainly has a wealth of knowledge inside of him. And it's been a long time since Rick Adams has spoken with author Eustace Mullins. And good evening to you, Eustace. Hi.
You know, I put a special attachment to my phone so that it rings louder, and that's why I'm able to talk to people now.
Oh, the ring?
I had a silent phone for several years.
Uh-huh.
It never rang.
I thought the Mossad was picking up your phone calls.
They were relaying them to their New York office.
Yeah. And what happened? Did they try anything except taking away your driver's license or whatever?
Oh, they've done that. I'm still under house arrest. I've got to go to court again on another charge of failure to appear on July 28th. And I still have my $900 million lawsuit against the Commonwealth of Virginia, which the Attorney General of Virginia filed a 47-page motion to dismiss on July 7th, but then he didn't have the hearing after all, and he dismissed it on his own. But he dismissed it without prejudice. He had asked to dismiss it with prejudice, and he dismissed it without prejudice, so I'm going to refile it this week.
Oh, good for you. Good. I wish you well in that endeavor as well, Eustace. You're a man who's fighting many battles, and you have indeed fought many over the years. And
I'm not fighting any battle for myself. I'm fighting for the American people.
Well, that's fine. That's good. But I don't know if the American people appreciate that or deserve it at this point.
Well, I don't know if they do either, because when they see somebody fighting on their behalf, they want to, what is this guy's angle? You know, what is he going to get out of it?
Exactly. I remember with Jarvis, you know, in California with a proposition on taxes. They said the same thing, you know, and no matter who comes along. Sure.
Yeah.
People are suspect, and, of course, I don't blame them to some extent because they've been lied to so much and deceived.
They've had a few phony defenders in the past, so I don't blame them for being uneasy.
Right. Well, I'm glad to have you back. It's been a while, Eustace, and
I've had a terrible phone trouble here for the last 2 years, and now we seem to have it straightened out temporarily.
Right. Well, that's wonderful. I'm glad that you are back and you've overcome those hurdles, and we have lots to catch up on tonight.
Well, we certainly do. These are crucial days.
Indeed they are. So stay where you are, Eustace, and we will now invite listeners, especially new listeners as well, to jump aboard and get ready with a question or comment for Eustace Mullins, author of many books, and we'll have him capsulize his story again of political persecution here in these United States. I'm Rick Adams, Radio Avenger. We shall return with more. To begin the program, indeed, Rick Adams with you, Radio Avenger, and The number is 800-313-9443. Of course, Eustace Mullins, our guest. Eustace, just for those who are new listeners who never heard you before, I want you to just mention how far back you go and what got you canned from the Library of Congress.
Well, I was personally fired from the Library of Congress by Senator Herbert Lehman, one of the richest men in the world, the head of the firm of Lehman Brothers Bankers of New York. And I was the only person ever fired from the staff of the Library of Congress for political reasons, because nobody at the Library of Congress had ever indulged in politics before. And nobody has been fired for political reasons since. This happened in 1952. And nobody else has ever been fired from the library since that time. Apparently, my example was such that nobody ever dared exhibit any interest in anything since I left there in 1952.
So you had the lawsuit as well, didn't you, against them?
Oh, I filed in the federal district court. It was thrown out immediately.
Exactly.
Oh, yes. It was never heard. But, you know, I was sure that this Attorney General of Virginia last week, when he filed his motion to dismiss with prejudice, would get his dismissal with prejudice, which means I couldn't refile. But instead, apparently he felt he was on dangerous ground because he had a private hearing. We had a hearing scheduled for July 7th. But on July 5th, the day after July 4th, he held a private meeting in his office, a one-party meeting, and dismissed it himself, but without prejudice. Apparently, he wasn't able to dismiss it with prejudice because of an illegal proceeding. So I'm in process of refiling the case right now.
And I'm sure that everyone in Virginia, or at least I would think anyone of note, knows exactly who Eustace Mullins is.
Well, I'm the only person who ever sued the Commonwealth of Virginia for $900 million, and that's not an insignificant sum, even for me. In fact, a friend of mine asked me the other day, Eustace, why did you sue for $900 million? And I said, well, that happened to be the amount of money I needed at the time.
But and unfortunately, it didn't come through for you, did it?
Well, it hasn't come through yet, but I got to refile the suit.
Yeah.
So obviously, I'm still interested.
I'm not going to be holding my breath, though, you know.
Oh, no. Well,
We know how government works and how the crooks will operate, and you know, I mean, you know, first of all, you're on the wrong side. You're on the right side, and that means you're wrong. So,
that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And I'm in an occupied state.
Virginia
had no self-government since 1865, when it was occupied by federal troops. And there's never been a free election in the state of Virginia or any southern state since 1865. And there's none coming up in the near future. By the way, I think both political parties are in a terrible shape. You know, neither political party has a presidential candidate for 2088. It's a terrible dilemma.
You know, it makes me laugh. You bring up the parties, but really, there is no two-party system.
There really hasn't been one
for a long time.
Oh, gosh, yes, that's right.
I mean, you know, we really and truly don't have any true political competition in this country whatsoever within the so-called mainstream of politics. Now, anyone who comes along who's an independent and starts talking real issues and offering a real platform, or immediately is shunned aside by the media, or given the heave-ho, the elbow, because they're considered to be extreme candidates, you know, on the fringe, as they say.
Well, that's
how they depose of you right up front.
Oh, they do indeed. And then when they have public meetings at libraries and universities for the candidates, a splinter party candidate is never invited. He's kept out to cold, which is totally illegal.
If
you announce that you are a candidate for a public office, and then they invite the candidates for that office to have a candidates meeting, and if they don't invite you, well, if you go there, you will not be admitted. This happens many times because I've known many splinter party candidates. They have never been included in a public advertised meeting for the candidate.
Now,
so they have no voice.
That's not surprising, though, is it? Really?
No, No, it's not. Well, nothing's surprising.
You know, in the old days, you know, the convention system, especially for a president, was pretty much, you know, at least they went through the motions of pretending that they would hold some competitiveness and open, you know, the process up. So you had the delegates and you had all of those, you know, eventually voting.
Oh, a very involved process, yes.
But now, I mean, in the last several presidential elections, there has been no surprise. There's been absolutely no real process of involvement whatsoever. Been a done deal. We've known pretty much up front how it's going to turn out, and the candidates are already chosen.
Oh,
so, I mean, it's a joke. It really is a tragic joke perpetrated on it.
And Nelson Rockefeller destroyed the Republican Party, just like Bill Clinton has destroyed the Democratic Party.
How did Rockefeller do that?
Well, as the Eastern so-called liberal Republicans,
mm-hmm.
He destroyed the old Republican Party completely,
mm-hmm.
and it has never recovered because both George Bush's father and son were Eastern liberal Republican,
mm-hmm.
and they have not had a conservative Republican since Robert Taft.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when H.L. Hunt went to Chicago
mm-hmm.
to campaign for Robert Taft for president.
Yes.
And, of course, he was the richest man in the world, but as far as Chicago is concerned, he was the poorest man in the world. His money didn't mean a thing up there.
That's right, yeah. The Daily Machine.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but, you know, I got to thinking about you. This is a little bit off the topic we've been talking about, but I couldn't help but think of you today when I was getting wind of this story about this young boy in your state, I believe, Virginia, who is being basically held as a prisoner of the state because
the state has a lot of prisoners.
Well, he in particular has refused to take any further chemotherapy for his lymphoma.
Oh, yes, I've been reading about that case.
All right, now here's a case where the state is indeed acting exactly like the KGB.
Oh, absolutely.
And attempting to basically tell the parents they have no rights, and the son has no rights either. We will decide for him what will be the prescribed, you know, approach. And you had written a book years ago called, you know, Murder by Prescription.
Murder by Injection.
Murder by Injection, rather. And it might as well be prescription as well. But you had written that book, and boy,
in 1988.
That was a real eye-opener for me.
I'm so wild about that. I get orders for it every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I chose that title, Murder by Injection, I thought it was too strong.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that was in 1988. And the book has been circulating ever since, and I've never heard one criticism of that title to this day.
And even the AMA has endorsed it with seal of approval, right?
Well, not quite. No. Well, the AMA itself calls it, at its annual meetings, it calls itself the American Murder Association.
Yes.
The AMA is.
I mean, we're laughing, but it really is tragic because, like I say, all too often in America today, we have lost all of our basic fundamental rights and freedoms, and we have this this imbecile in the White House telling the world how free we are, and we're fighting for freedom in Iraq and all over the world, and yet we don't have fundamental freedoms here in these United States.
Well, I'm afraid this man is not an imbecile. He tries to pretend that he is, but I don't think he really is.
Well, I think it would be an insult to the imbeciles, by the way. Yeah, well, he's not bright, but the thing is, he doesn't have to be very bright.
No,
because
all he has to do is
just follow the machinery follow
absolutely.
The script.
He knows exactly what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's almost as good as Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan portrayed the role of president to perfection.
Well, I don't know about that. I really.
George does a pretty good job at it.
I think Ronald Reagan, was an actor. He had years of experience on the screen. Let's face it, when Ronald Reagan spoke, even he believed he was a conservative, Ronald Reagan, when he got through speaking. So, that takes some real professionalism, I think.
Well, when you're an actor, you have to believe in your own lines.
Yeah.
And he was good at that.
Yeah, I mean, Cap the Knife Weinberger knew, and all the rest of them that came from the California political scene knew real Ronald Reagan.
Schultz and all of them.
Yeah, they knew. They knew him too well, and he knew them, and he knew who was boss, obviously. But this case, I'd like to spend a couple of minutes on this case and invite callers, by the way, too. the Medocrats attempting to destroy another human being and
a young human being. That's exactly what it is. And, you know, I have accused the state of Virginia of murder by contract because they have prevented me from being a physician for the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was dropped from the veterans clinic because I could not go to my appointments. And when you don't show up for your appointments, they drop you from the rolls.
Oh,
so I have no doctor now whatsoever. I haven't seen it.
Probably very fortunate.
It could very well be. That
yes.
saved my life.
There you go. Doctors could be dangerous, as you pointed out in your book. There's no question about that.
Well,
murder by injection.
To somebody who's written a book called Murder by Injection.
Yeah, exactly my point. All right, we have a break coming up, and I'm going to invite people to call in for you, Eustace Mullins, tonight with any question on anything from the Federal Reserve, politics, economics, the world scene, and, of course, this case of medical freedom being totally and completely destroyed here in these United States by fascist judges and fascist medocrats and all of these little Napoleon wannabes, if you will. And we'll do that at 1-800-313-9443. That's the magic number. I'm Rick Adams, the Paul Revere of Talk Radio. We'll be back with more.
Rick Adams is back. Live, uncensored, Radio Free America continues on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Yes, and our guest is Eustace Mullins with us tonight. And Eustace, the pharmaceutical industry a long time ago really started being really financed by a bunch of people who were connected with the Warburgs, the Rockefellers, and so forth, as you know. And they really helped to create this FDA, which a lot of people don't realize, like other government agencies, was designed to basically eliminate competition and eliminate freedom of choice eventually. The FDA, like the ICC and other federal agencies, Agriculture Department, would basically serve the interests of the elite and the powerful against the independents and the smaller companies. Isn't that the way it's turned out, though, huh?
Oh, it's turned out that way very well. In fact, the American pharmaceutical industry and the FDA have worked hand in glove for years. And, you know, the FDA accepts without examination or criticism all of the so-called evidence of the tests which the American pharmaceutical industry carries out in order to support its drugs.
So when they tell doctors the consensus that is practiced out of the establishment in America today, FDA approved, kosher approved, you know, CDC, all of this, will tell you what is acceptable and what is not, then the allopathic physicians come along and say, okay, what do we do? Well, one thing you do is you take a disease like cancer, which, of course, is out of control now. It's grown tremendously in the United States in the last 50 years. For these reasons that we can get into, if you wish. But in any event, the pharmaceuticals have helped metastasize cancer. They've helped spread cancer. And then they come along and they say, now you will treat the patients with things like surgery, radiation, and, of course, highly toxic chemotherapy. Now, they've done that to these people who are young people, teenagers, like the 16-year-old boy and the one in Texas, the young girl. And what they've done is they have basically superseded the authority of the government, the authority of the family and the parents who, with their child, have agreed against a certain mode of action. This is barbaric. This is criminal. I mean, this is what they did in the Soviet Union.
Well, it's really a criminal conspiracy because when you deny a child proper medical treatment, you're murdering that child.
Well, that's what they're doing. Alternative treatments are not considered to be acceptable to the, his master, his highness, his majesty. And this judge sits down and looks at these professional killers, these medical organizations come along and say, look, this is what we expect him to do. And so what? If he's going to have toxic side effects, That's too bad. We're not going to allow him to leave the country to go to alternative clinics somewhere else. And why, by the way, should he have to leave this country, these United States, to be treated as he wishes to be treated when this boy is very ill from the effects of chemotherapy as well as the lymphoma? This is not America. This is a fascist police state.
Well, it's really more of a Nazi. I don't think I call them Nazis now because fascism is too weak. Fascism was too mild a term for the kind of people running. They're Nazis, not fascists.
Well, and I don't think even the Nazis would go this far, to be honest with you.
No, indeed.
What they're getting away with today far surpasses anything that the Nazis ever got away with. That's for sure.
Well, IG Farben was one of the most powerful corporations Nazi Germany.
Yeah. And
IG Farben is bigger today in the United States than ever was in Germany.
And that was, who owned that company now? Is that a German
family? Well, Germany owned by the Rothschilds and the Standard Oil Company.
Yeah. So there was some Jewish interest in that.
During the war,
the Allied forces were not bombing those facilities, were they?
No, this beautiful office building in Frankfurt was the only building left standing in Frankfurt.
Uh-huh.
And so it became the headquarters of the Allied military government in 1945.
Mm-hmm.
And it was governed, the entire country of Germany was governed from the IG Farben building.
People, they're not aware of history. As Henry Ford used to say, history is bunk. When we start getting into the real history and the details of it, people raise their eyebrows and say, Eustace, you've got to be kidding. I mean, we don't hear that from Dan Blathers and, Eric Rosenblatt and the rest of them there, Tom Brokaw and all of them. I mean, they just lie to us, every night. They don't tell us
I tell people things that I tell them to shock them.
Sure.
I don't do it for shock value, but it's true. It is shocking.
It is shocking, yeah. No, you're right. I don't expect Brian Williams to come up anytime soon with some facts on this matter. That's for sure. Now,
if I could get on national television, I'd have the biggest audience in the country.
Yeah, right.
Because I could tell him in 2 minutes more exciting things than in a year from CBS.
I'm sure you could. And, boy, that would definitely rock some stables, no question about it. Our number is 800-313-9443. Eustace Mullins is our guest, and we are going to go to the phones in a moment. I think we'll just wait for the break because I hate to start a call in midstream. Well, we're in right now, though. I mean, we're talking about this whole business of freedom and what freedom is. It's not just the right of private property as the basics of all freedom, but it's the right to choose, your health care, the right to choose your treatment, the right to choose your schooling, your children's schooling. All of these things now are being taken from us a little at a time. And it's a very subtle frog-in-the-kettle process. We'll talk about it when we come back. Rita, you'll be our first caller. I'm Rick Adams. Eustace Mullins, our guest. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Don't feel like the Lone Ranger. You've got the Radio Avenger on your side.
Hey, Rick Adams. Hey, turn your horse radio on. Rick Adams on. Ouch.
We are back now with Eustace Mullins, who has written more books than I can shake a stick at. How many now to date have you written, Eustace?
15, and I'm dictating an autobiography, and it's the greatest experience of my life because I have total recall of conversations that I had 50 years ago, and I can just reel them off just like we're talking right now.
Good. I want to get into some personages from the era that you were growing up in the 40s and 50s, particularly.
Well, the greatest life in the world. I've been one of the luckiest person in the world.
Sure.
I mean, I'm the only person in the world that can brag about, and I like them all, and that's why I brag about knowing them. People like H.L. Hunt, Joe McCarthy, and Ezra Pound, and These friends of mine have been some of the most reviled people in American history.
Right. Well, that ought to tell you they were on the right side right there.
Well, they certainly were.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're
yeah.
being vindicated every day.
Yeah. I got to get into that a little bit later, but let's take a call or two right now. Rita in Colorado, you're on the air and on RBNLive.com with Eustace. Hi.
Oh, hi. Well, I have a whole lot of things to talk about Eustace with, but one thing I wanted to bring up right now is the AMA. And I called in Michael Piper a while back, and I talked a little bit about my town. I live in a town called Trinidad, Colorado, and it actually happens to be a Illuminati hub right here.
Really?
Very seriously. And the building, it was formerly owned by the Plestiv family. William Plestiv was just made president of the AMA.
Mm-hmm.
That same building was where the Jew doctor Stanley Biber performed a whole lot of sex change operations, and then he actually didn't recognize that certain of us are Christians and we have different rights than other people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so this kind of tied into the whole cult of that the government thing that happened here, but the history of this place goes way back. We're actually on the Purgatory River, and we have this tradition of the penitentes that these people from they're Franciscans from way back, Middle Ages type people that flagellated themselves and but anyway, so the monolithic people came in with the frontier families, and they started this kind of cult. And that's what it really is. It's kind of this it's kind of like a dumbed down version of Christianity, and it's kind of starts to infect all of Colorado, because we don't have the Red Cross here. We got Bonfilis that takes our blood. Our blood is taken by the Department of Agriculture. That's who takes our blood, you know. And I actually went to Europe in 2002, and I parted Holland and France, and I told them not to vote for that constitution, because it's the same cult over there. They actually are on a track to breed by cannibalism instead of by Christianity, and that's where they're headed. But the thing is, if they call themselves Illuminati, and they call themselves Satanists, then they sort of have to recognize that there really are Christians, you know? And so I've got this kind of hold on them, and last year I told them, okay, you people, you don't display the nativity here. And I told the one Catholic church that's still here, and so they didn't display the nativity. They put a symbol of a shepherd kneeling with a priest. But then after that, the Jesuits got taken out after 132 years. Now the Jesuits aren't here anymore. We've got diocesan priests, and that might be worse than that. But it's actually, see, it's a cult. It's all tied together. I don't understand how a organization with 250,000, half a million people in the AMA. And they just had another guy become president-elect, and nobody voted for him. He was unopposed. How can that be? You know?
Well, they all become monolithic organizations.
It's like the AMA.
Opposition in the ranks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the AMA, the ABA, you know, you name it. They are protected. And the one thing they despise is any kind of disuniformity or dissent. And they practice this consensus medicine.
Oh, yeah.
This is what they do, and if you're not part of the consensus, then, hey, we can look at your license and determine you're not fit to practice. And this is what they do.
They're headed for cannibalism, and cannibalism doesn't breed. Let me tell you, I mean, I'm serious. I've been to different places, you know, to seen a lot of different places in the world. I parted the Hague, you know, which is a cesspool of a whole lot of different people, and they just... got people with chromosomes going nowhere, you know?
Yeah.
And really, I mean, it really turns into hell. And so, and so people are starting to understand that, you know, and so I think that they kind of, they're getting to a place where, well, they followed this sort of philosophy, but it isn't really a philosophy now. They kind of need a way out, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
and,
okay.
And Christianity is the way out. I mean, we got to figure out, you know, people from a lot of, you know, hundreds and thousands of years have known some things about people and how, you know, how to keep people together and nations together. And we, you know, there has to be a way to bridge that gap.
You know, the one thing that distinguishes us from most of the other countries of the world, and did it one time in Europe, was that faith of Christianity. Well, you know, Western Civ, we called it, and of course that is a thing of the past as far as this new generation is concerned. To even suggest Western Civ or, you know, the West, if you will, a synonymous with Christianity is considered an unpardonable sin now in the lexicon of the politically correct. Isn't that right, Eustace?
Oh, it is indeed, and the Zionists are protesting louder than ever that any profession of Christianity is open anti-Semitism.
Yeah, well, they've actually convinced many now in the churches, like the Episcopalians, that they had better revise their scriptures and throw out the scriptures that might offend them. And I think, you know what? I would get out of those churches as fast as my feet could carry me.
You've got to, because they are leaving Christ. And why should you go to a church that has left Christ?
Right, right. And they're sitting down attempting to kiss and kiss the feet of those who are oppressing them and who are sniping at their faith, no matter who they are. That is an abomination. Can you imagine if we did the same to their particular religion?
Oh, yeah.
One can just see the screaming and ranting and raving now.
We've got to be nice to Islam right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't be too nice to the Church of England, because, they're running into the monolithic problem a whole lot more.
They did it a long time before us, my friend.
Well, the Church of England is pure Byzantium anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, right.
That's
okay,
we've
got to move along. Thank you very much for that call, Rita.
All right, thank
I appreciate
you.
It. And our number is 800-313-9443. Before we get back to the phones, you lived at a time in the 50s when, you know, I look back now, and this is the post-war era, and a guy like Dwight David Eisenhower, Supreme Allied Commander in World War II, was a good buddy of the Soviets, the butchers of the Kremlin. As you know, he had quite a relationship with him, didn't he?
He was the greatest communist that ever served on the board of Columbia University. They made him president.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Here was a guy that was a Democrat, and he was picked by Roosevelt to head up that position, which is interesting. And then he comes along and manages to get the convention, the Republican convention, which shows you the kind of corruption involved in the whole Republican process. Yeah. And a lot of people were fooled by Ike, you see, because they believed he was a, quote, war hero, when in fact, as you know, he was a war criminal, and the evidence mounted against him heavily.
Oh, I don't think Eisenhower ever heard a shot fired in anger, because the Germans were not as dumb as we were.
Mm-hmm.
They recognized that George Patton was our greatest general.
Yeah.
The Germans revered George Patton, but they had no use for Eisenhower whatsoever.
And Patton, by the way, had a lot of respect for the German army as well, the German fighting
indeed.
Man.
Well,
and that's when they started.
They
started accusing him, of course, of being a Nazi too. You know.
Well, that was because he helped Joe McCarthy defend some of the Nazi prisoners, German prisoners who were being tortured by torturers who assumed the garb of priests and went in to torture them.
I know.
And Joe McCarthy was shocked by that. Of course, he represented Milwaukee, which is a huge German city.
Right, right.
And he was perfectly right to represent his constituents.
Mm-hmm.
But they called Joe a Nazi for that.
Oh,
and he never got over it.
Sure. Now, I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to get into a little bit about Joe McCarthy. And I happened to be watching this propaganda film the other day that I have. And you remember Drew Pearson and Jack Anderson.
Oh, I used to see see you, Drew Pearson, outside the National Press Club every day.
Well, Tom Anderson used to refer to him as Pew Smearson, and oh, I refer it to Jack as Jack Asterson. But, you know, I watched this film, and here was Jack Anderson. Now, this is in the 1970s. And he was saying, and this, I quote him almost verbatim from memory, Jack Anderson was saying that he was called by Joe McCarthy into his office, and Joe said, now, Jack, I got to sit down and talk to you, because, you know, you and Drew Pearson are doing all of these vicious columns and so forth. And he told him, look, you know, this is true. I am right. What I'm telling you is the case about the communist apparatus in Washington and so on and so forth. And then Jack Anderson said, point blank, to the camera, that I told you, Joe, don't you remember when you told me a long time ago that you made this whole thing up, that you didn't believe a word of it, that you were just being a politician and just exploiting it for your own good?
Well,
now, this is Jack.
I was handed to him by George Sikorsky and Xavier Hoover.
But here's Jack Anderson. My point is, Houston, here's Jack Anderson, a supposed respected, quote-unquote, you know, newspaper man, making a statement like that, which is preposterous on its face, on the surface. And then we now know, since then, with all of the evidence that has been released from the Soviet archives and the Venona intercepts and so forth, that indeed, you know, everything McCarthy said was true, but only it was understated by him.
It was understated, absolutely,
all the way. And so understated that we find an incredible apparatus of control over the Roosevelt administration and the Truman, and yes, indeed, the Eisenhower administration as well, of Soviet puppets working through the government.
Absolutely. There were more communists in Washington than there were in Moscow.
Well, my point is some college student or some neophyte, you know, would hear Jack Anderson say this and say, why? He can't be making this up. After all, he's a reporter. He's a journalist, you know. And Joe McCarthy told him that he made up the whole thing about communist espionage, and Jack Anderson's telling us this now. Well, you see, this is the kind of deception, and this is the kind of propaganda.
It's absolute deception.
Which is used to create more lies and more deceptions. I can just imagine Joe McCarthy coming in saying, hey, you're a reporter. I want to tell you what a fraud I am. And I want to tell you that I'm making this whole thing up. And, you know, we have to believe Jack Anderson. Now, I don't know of anybody that really had too much faith in everything Jack Anderson said, because he and Drew Pearson were both exposed later as being frauds. I mean, they both made up stories. They made up a lot of disinformation along the way because they were, you know, muckraker journalists.
Oh, they certainly were. I was interviewed by Jack Anderson several times. I appeared on his show.
Right.
And, you know, he was the slipperiest individual I've ever talked to.
Yeah. I mean, at least Morrow, as dishonest as Edward R. Morrow could be, he at least had some real finesse and smoothness and polish.
He was polished. He was polished.
Yeah, I mean, Jack Anderson couldn't fill his shoes, no question about that. And I'm not doing a brief for Morrow, that's for sure.
He was always in over his depth, but Jack was just riding the waves, that's all.
But you see, this is how American perception is created by the New York Times, the Washington, all of this controlled media apparatus, for people who don't know any better, who just don't have a clue as to what's going on. So they could elect a man like Eisenhower and call him, you know, I like Ike. He was as American as apple pie. No one really knew his background, his history, and what he did in Europe in World War II. Had they known and had Patton not met with misfortune, of course, Eisenhower wouldn't have been allowed to be dog catcher, never mind president.
Well, Patton was not allowed to return to the United States, because if he was allowed to return to the United States, Eisenhower could not have been elected.
Exactly what I've said all these years.
Absolutely true.
But more than not allowing him to return, he had to meet with an unfortunate automobile incident, because he opened his mouth and made the statement that he was going to resign from the U.S. military, throw away all the medals, all that stuff, and tell the truth to the American public.
Well, he always told the truth. He was a very forthright person.
He was going to come back home and tell the truth, not from Europe, but right here. And, you know, Patton wanted to go right through Russia, finish the job, eliminate the problem. And, of course, Eisenhower was primarily there to make sure that Russia was protected. Joe Stalin was his buddy, Uncle Joe, you know?
Uncle Joe. Well, Harry Truman is what I called Truman, good old Joe.
Yeah, yeah. And so we see that hand of treason and treachery in World War II. And I look back and say, you know, we need to talk about these things more, because never a day goes by that we don't hear about the Holocaust. And we don't hear about the other Holocausts.
Oh, the real Holocaust. A million people a year for 80 years murdered in Russia.
Yeah.
Not one person has ever been arrested to this day for those crimes.
That's right. No, and here there are no reparations for these people. And we're still talking now about slave reparations today rather than reparations. Yeah, I mean, it's unheard of. And how insulting it is to think that all of those Croatians and Latvians and, you know, the Lithuanians and the Czechs and others that were handed over to slavery by men like Eisenhower, insulting, they have never had their justice, and they have never sued and gotten the kind of money that they should have had gotten. They should have received, unfortunately.
Never once. That's right.
Absolutely not. All right. 800-313-9443. Eustace Mullins is my guest, and don't be shy now. You can jump aboard. I'm not over-talking. I'll give you first fiddle when you get on the lines. We'll put you right on with Eustace Mullins, who's here to answer questions about anything and everything from A to Z, Federal Reserve, international bankster, gangsters, and much more. We'll be back with him and you. I'm Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, the Paul Revere of Talk Radio. Yes, indeed. We are here, two Avengers tonight, Rick Adams and Eustace Mullins, and we are going to go right back to the phones now, 800-313-9443. Don't forget our RBN listen line, where you can listen along each and every night, 512-646-0396. Woody in Pennsylvania, you're on with Eustace Mullins. Hello, Woody.
Hi. I'd like to ask Eustace. He said that he had a memory that he remembered back in the 50s. Is there some way that he learned that, or is it just something that came naturally to him?
Oh, it's natural, because I never had any training in that, and my memory has improved over the last 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
When I had these conversations with Ezra Pound and people like that in the 1940s, I never expected that 60 years later I would be able to reproduce those conversations word for word. But I have no trouble doing it whatsoever. And it's just amazing, because I've had a very tough life, and I'm amazed that my mind has stayed so keen all these years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was just hoping there was some book or something where a person could help to learn a little bit of that, just a little bit.
Well, I would like to offer help on that, but I really don't know how it happened. I'm not taking any special, I take supplements and things like that to help somewhat. But I don't have any secrets whatsoever to offer in that regard.
Well, I remember in college, you know, there was a couple of things. You know, they would come up with mnemonic devices, you know.
Oh, yes.
Memory devices.
And yes, I heard all that.
Sure.
I never used any of that in college.
No, no. And then they come up with the IRA. You know, it's called impression, repetition, and association.
Uh-huh.
You wanted to remember a word or a particularly new term. That's what you do. You'd have an impression.
Yeah, association is quite good.
Sure, and then you'd repeat it, and then you'd associate the word with something, you know?
Oh, yes.
So in any event, does that help you, Woody, at all?
Well, it answered my question. I have one other question for Eustace. Does he have any place that has a listing of the books that he has available?
Not at the present time. My publishing company is sort of moribund right now, because, you see, I had a number of strokes in 2002, and I spent a couple of years in nursing homes. And during the years that I was in nursing homes, practically everything I had was dissipated. All of my resources, money, and records and everything pretty much went down the drain. So I've had trouble rebuilding that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I knew there was some of them that you would put out I would like to get a hold of, and that was the reason I wondered.
Yeah, well, most of them are really good books, like Curse of Canaan and The World Order and the Ezra Pound Biography are out of print. But I hope to get those reprinted in this coming year.
Good, I hope you can. And thank you very much, Eustace. I appreciate what you've done for the country.
Amen. Well, thank you, Woody.
Got a lot of work to do yet.
Sure. Amen. That's the spirit. That's the spirit. All right. How about Danny in Texas? How are you, Danny? Welcome to the program, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to talk. So I got to mention now that over the years the communists have taken over the federal government contracting. Mm-hmm. I used to be a bidder at my elevator repair and maintenance company. I had the contract for Walter Army Hospital, and I bidded the National Institute of Health, and I bidded the Smithsonian Institution and the Leavenworth Prison. And as times went on, I found out that at that time, the contract, federal government contract, said that only Americans can bid a federal contract and use American-made parts. And then slowly, like just year by year, they snuck it in. Now, foreigners can bid federal government contract and use foreign-owned parts. And what's even more unbelievable is that it used to be veterans had extra credit for federal government contracts. Well, now foreigners can just override your extra bonus points for being a veteran. Mm-hmm. It means nothing to be a veteran when you bid a contract now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that Reagan started, and now it's just a joke. And
I can understand Reagan started. He started a lot of things.
Yeah. You want to hang on, Danny? All right, we'll be right back with hour number two. And Leslie, you'll be next, and others. Rick Adams and Eustace Mullins, we shall return.
Censored. Radio Free America. Another exciting, informative hour is warming up. Rick Adams is on fire.
Thank you. I have the flame, indeed. And so is Eustace Mullins, our guest. Danny, are you still there on the phones?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
One more thing. There might be some evidence here, that'd be legal evidence, if you wanted to prove how the federal government contracts are corrupt. All federal government contracts are listed in a daily publication, sometimes probably three times. They call it the Commerce Business Daily. It's on the Internet, Commerce Business Daily. And if you want to bid, I mean, selling toothbrushes to the VA, you name it. Anything that the federal government bids a contract on is in that magazine. And except one thing. And like I bid a federal government contracts.
Yes.
I learned that the Federal Reserve Banks, the contract in those buildings is not in there. I mean, like Ron Paul said, he could go to the secret army bases and submarine bases in Portsmouth or San Antonio and walk right in. But if he wanted to go to a Federal Reserve Bank building, they wouldn't let him in the front door.
And I get that.
Yeah, I just want to point out that if anybody out there is a lawyer wants to prove the federal government is corrupt, the Federal Reserve Bank is corrupt, you can do that. But get the Commerce Business Daily and everything. I mean, the elevator contracts for military bases, via federal buildings, it's all there except you cannot bid elevator maintenance contracts for the Federal Reserve Bank.
Hmm.
It's a private, it's taxpayer money there, but yet it's being privately controlled. And I was actually offered a contract once because I was on the in crowd with a business agent in a certain city. He said, well, God, what do you want me to bid this? What do you give you this contract worth a fortune? And I was making $14,000, $18,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I got scared and quit because I think these guys are dangerous.
Good for you. You got wise pretty fast, huh, Danny?
Well, I didn't get rich, though.
Well, you know, riches aren't anything, believe me. It's not the whole story, is it?
Yeah, he was called Ronald Reagan Red Ron. Was that what y'all called him at one time? Red Ron?
I never called him Red Ron.
All he's known for years is Red Ronnie.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
I just called him stupid, but, I mean, no. they used to say, people used to say 666, you know, Ronald Reagan, Ronald Wilson Reagan. There's six letters in each of his names, and they would say he would be the beast, the mark of the beast, but, you know, of course it didn't fit.
Well, you know, when Ronald Reagan died, they gave him a Pharaoh's funeral. That was an amazing thing.
Yeah, didn't they?
Because he'd been out of the public eye for years, and he got one of the greatest funerals in American history.
He
that
certainly
showed that they were really devoted to him.
Yeah, that sounds like he got a full Masonic funeral, too.
Oh, he did indeed.
Yeah, yeah. And you've written about the Masons quite a bit, by the way. I know you've talked about them extensively, Eustace.
Oh, well, they're there and everything. You see, I'm here in Virginia. Virginia was a Masonic state for over 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
Long before the Revolution.
The influence through the ages has been enormous.
Oh, it certainly has.
And the concentric circles of power and so forth. I was just reading something by Tex Mars today.
Tex Mars is a great guy.
Yeah, and he was talking about the Ottoman Empire and how they had taken over that.
Oh, yeah.
And then destroyed, of course, the Armenian Genocide as a result. And there was a real Holocaust there. And
well, they destroyed the Byzantine Empire because the mace that so infiltrated the Constantinople government that the poor emperor didn't have a chance when the Turks finally attacked. They opened the gates to him.
Sure. Sure. All right, Danny, are you done?
Yeah, wait, one more thing quick. Mr. McCarthy, I was reading a New American magazine, the John Birch Society. I take that magazine. And there's a book written that verifies everything McCarthy said was completely true.
Well, that's exactly right. Everything has come out.
Well, there's a lot of books about that. And one of them was, written by a Mr. Herman, I believe. And I had read that a few years ago. Also, Medford Evans had written The Assassination of Joe McCarthy. I'm sure you remember that.
They gave me a Bethesda Naval Hospital autopsy of Joe McCarthy at his gravesite once when I spoke up there. They had the official autopsy that said that he was murdered.
Well, they weren't supposed to have taken an autopsy, but they said, okay, we'll be back to discuss these things and more. Thank you, Danny. Eustace Mullins, Rick Adams, we'll be back with Leslie, Paul, and you.
Hitting them pretty hard and knocking them right out of the park. Rick Adams is on. Right on. On base, on point, on RBNLive.com.
Okay, we are back now with Eustace Mullins. Eustace, before we go back to our phones, you had mentioned an autopsy report on McCarthy, but I had read in an article in the Barnes Review publication that the family did not accede to any autopsy. So I don't know if that was factual or not.
Well, there was an official paper issued by Bethesda Naval Hospital that was considered a medical report on Joe's condition. And they said that the the germs were introduced into his system with such quantity that's what killed him overnight.
The hepatitis?
Enough hepatitis was introduced to him in his house 2 days before he died that he simply could not survive.
Now, the reason for that was what, do you think?
Well, they just had to get rid of him. He was too dangerous.
Well, I understand that, he was really making a comeback, and he was going to come back with full force and start to begin a whole new career and be able to fight back against the scurrilous charges that were made. They could not afford to have that happen, is at least what I've understood.
Oh, yes. Well, Eisenhower, as president, was terrified of Joe McCarthy, and that's why he commissioned Richard Nixon and George Cabot Lodge and two other people to politically assassinate him through the phony reprimand.
And then Eisenhower signed the executive order forbidding any further investigation or future investigation into the State Department, which we know was loaded with communists.
Oh, yes.
Now, if we knew it, I'm sure Eisenhower knew exactly what was going on, and he was part of the treason that was going on. I have no doubt about that.
He was deep into it.
Yeah. I mean, I look at the Hungarian uprising and how he betrayed them. And
that was massacre of those people.
All under his administration, and he and Mimi were running around smiling and giggling and laughing and praying for the victims behind the Iron Curtain, all these phony veils of tears that they were putting out at the time. Just incredible.
But, one good thing happened. I've met many Hungarian patriots who came to Hungary after the Hungary uprising. Mm-hmm. But we got a lot of good people in this country from that.
Yes, we did.
A thousand of them came over here.
There was a light at the end of the tunnel, indeed.
Oh,
amen.
It was.
All right, let's say hello to another caller right now, 800-313-9443. Leslie in Virginia. Hello, Leslie.
thank you for taking my call. I just started listening in about a half hour ago. But, Mr. Mullins, I'm sure you could tell the audience and verify what I'm saying is accurate. Thomas Martin, wouldn't you say, was the most influential congressman in Virginia after Robert E. Lee?
Who is that?
Thomas Martin, because...
Oh, Thomas Martin. Well, I wrote that story about how he was bribed to set up the Byrd machine.
Right, but didn't the Rothschilds, because he beat... The reason why this story is so important, and Mr. Mullins will explain it, he was, I don't want to use the word, the term bribe, but correct me, he competed against, he ran against Robert E. Lee's son,
Fitzhugh
Lee.
And Thomas Martin was a representative of Jacob Schiff. He represented the railroads that the Kuhn Loeb Company was operating.
Yes, but didn't he pay off the Rothschilds pay off 10 Congress people for them not to run against him?
They paid off 10 congressmen and gave them $1,000 apiece, and that's how they defeated Lee.
And yes, and because this story is not told, Rick, and tell them how they hijacked the Federal Reserve. Tell them how they used Martin and Woodrow Wilson, and they slipped that deal through.
And Carter Glass. They couldn't have gotten it through Congress without Carter Glass, because the Congress despised Woodrow Wilson. And the only way that they could get the Federal Reserve Act through Congress to use Carter Glass as its proponent, and Carter Glass put it through, and they paid him off handlessly after that.
Did you hear that, Rick?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been aware of it for many years. Also, the Christmas recess that was used to get what they called a quorum, you know?
Oh, they used every angle they could think of.
In order to get it through, and we had the income tax passed the same year by sponsored by Nelson Aldrich from my neck of the woods, the maternal grandfather of Rockefeller.
Right.
And he pushed that through from Newport, Rhode Island.
Oh, yeah.
And we had the direct election of senators. Now, why would they propose the direct election of senators as some sort of a great change, except they had wanted a democracy instead of a republic? And democracy would destroy the freedom.
To be a Republican with the Butler election of senators.
What I'm trying to get to, Mr. Mullins, is there documentation up at the courthouse, I assume, whether it's Richmond, Virginia, on the bribery that the Rothschild had given $1,000 apiece to win that election?
Oh, yes, that's true. And I put that in my American Christian Messenger in 1952. I published that story. And,
but where can I get the documentation? Because, see,
can she get it in the library is what she's asking. Public libraries, files.
Yeah, court records.
In the court records, that would be public records.
Oh, yeah, it's in the court records. That's really the bribery.
Okay. So you could look that up technically if if the information is there for you to look up, I assume, Leslie?
Yeah, the reason why, because I'm hitting on the Federal Reserve, you know where I'm going.
Sure.
Right. And so, Mr. Mullins, the records are still there, and I can go pick them up, correct?
They certainly are. It's one of the blackest moments in Virginia history. Was the bribery of those 10
Well, now, you mentioned Byrd. Did you mean Harry Byrd?
Harry Byrd. Well, you see, Harry Byrd inherited the Thomas Martin machine, and that became the Byrd machine.
But he became an independent, technically, didn't he?
Well, that was his son, Harry Jr., became an independent
okay,
later.
Okay, it was Harry Jr., yeah, yeah.
But the Byrd machine itself was the Rothschild machine because Harry Byrd's closest personal friend from his childhood in Martinsburg, West Virginia, was Louis Lichtenstein Strauss, who became a partner of Kuhn Loeb Company.
Yes, I remember.
And so the Byrd machine was always the Kuhn Loeb machine.
That's
all it was.
Rick, what I'm trying to establish here is the communist influence here in Virginia.
Oh, it is a communist influence, and I have been saying that for years.
Yeah, but the thing is, I want to thank you, Mr. Mullins, because I want to get the documents, and this is a great story, because here we've got bribery used directly and how that Federal Reserve was established and how this was slipped into the back door. And bribery money was used for the process for this vote. And I think that may be important someday.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Jerry Falwell lives in the Carter Glass Mansion right now as part of his Liberty University. And Jerry Falwell is sitting at Carter's Glass desk right now.
I guess he falls well.
Well, listen, that I didn't know that.
Well, that's interesting,
true.
Isn't it? You learn a lot from Eustace.
Hey, Rick, we may have a shot with all the information Mr. Mullins has.
Yes.
Bribery money for these people to show up, you know, right before Christmas, slip this through.
Yeah.
If we can just document these things.
Oh, absolutely. You know, a lot of this stuff is sitting there, and nobody has done the research. Like, you know, Jerome has done, Jerome Corsi and others have gone to official government websites and documents, which usually are a bore to most people. And here you've got the information. It's there. For the asking, and a lot of, you know, for instance, you know, people that I'm thinking of whose names escape me right now, but some of them I've interviewed, and they went and did the research from declassified government files after the post-war years, and what they found was absolutely amazing. Things about Henry Kissinger as a spy ring. You know, they found all this information that was just sitting there, and guess what? The New York Times didn't want to hear a word about it.
Well,
so much for the right to know.
The homework that Mr. Mullins has put on my plate tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there, and it's up for the people to let's go at it.
All right. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mullins.
And thank you, Leslie, for your persistence. Paul in Delaware, you're next on the program. Hi, Paul. You're next.
Hey, hello.
Yes.
I'd just like to thank Mr. Mullins for all of his hard work, and I'd like to thank Leslie, too.
Yes.
I'd just like to say, Leslie, please, I love that you're getting educated, but now make sure we do some action. But what I was calling in about is that, Eustace Mullins, I need to know where you stand on this. I know I'm going to really hurt some people, but you know what? I'm sick and tired of people running. Because all this homework about all these different subjects in history and dissecting history, I'd just like to know why all these Christians haven't figured out that Bible was put together by these adepts. So if you could comment on that, I hate to put you on the spot, but, you know, I can't get a radio show of my own, and I hear people are talking about they need integrity on their radio shows, but they got some show called the Investigative Journal. I've caught this guy in pathological lie after lie promoting this guy that's talking about Bill Clinton, and I've done the research. I can't believe I can't get on the radio show, and they've got all these people working with Al Ghryab and stuff, and I can't get a radio show. Someone needs to step up and tell the truth about all this stuff. And so dealing with history, it doesn't take much to really rip the Bible apart. But guess what? Everyone's looking for a savior to do it for them besides them getting up and doing it themselves. Comments?
Oh, I got to do the work. You got to do the legwork. Bill Benson researched the income tax, and he did such a great job. No one's ever equal to what he did. And he went to every state capital in the United States and research the legislature's voting on the Federal Reserve Act and the income tax.
Okay. Does that give you an answer that you were looking for or not, Paul?
I'm looking for a Christian to step up to the plate and don't run and tell me why they insist on promoting the Bible when they do their homework. If they do it, don't deny it. Just do your homework.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know, for instance, how can the Bible have started 6,000 years ago when, just for instance, the Chinese people can trace their history 10,000 years?
Well, there's a lot of good answers for that if you'd take the time to listen along. I thank you for the call. We'll talk about some of that, but not right now, all right? We'll do that in future programs. I'm Rick Adams. Thank you for the call. And Tom and Ed, you'll be next with Eustace Mullins. Stay tuned for more. We're back now with our guest, Eustace Mullins, and we are learning quite a bit tonight from each other, Eustace. Very happy to have you on again. It's been
a long time.
And indeed, it's easier now to get a hold of you, so we'll try to have you on a bit
more. Yeah, I'm not so isolated. I was cut off from the world for 2 years.
My goodness. Yeah, well, that was a while ago, and now you're, what, 84 now, are you?
84, yeah.
Wow. And
so I got another 50 years of hard work.
At least. All right. Let's say hello to Tom in Ohio now. Hi, Tom. You're on the program. That's you, Tom.
What is your website, Eustace?
My website is closed down now.
Oh, what, they knock you off the air?
No.
Yeah, they knocked me off the air.
I don't think so.
It's been out for some time now.
I think you, didn't you take it down, Eustace, yourself, though?
No, I didn't take it down.
No?
But they did. The computer company levied a lot of false fake charges against it, which I refused to pay, so they shut it down.
Right. Okay, so it was allegedly over money, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Eustace, the way that they're going now, how long do you think they're pretty much in control now? How much longer do you think it'll be before they enslave us totally?
Well, I think they're desperate right now. I pointed out that neither political party can mount a candidate for the next election, so what are they going to do?
Well, they can buy candidates.
Well, yes, they will.
Anybody in there they want.
But they haven't got anybody that want. That's the problem.
There's a talk of foreign troops in this country, Eustace. Is that true?
Oh, they've been here since 1945.
How many would you guesstimate?
Between 30 and 100,000. They have been at every major training camp in the United States since 1950, anyway.
So the Hessians are already here, then?
Oh, yes. The Hessians and Chinese and Russians have all been here.
I don't think there's enough backbone left in the... well, let's see. What do we have in the American Revolution? 3% and the rest are back in Rochester?
4%.
2%?
No, 4%. It was actually 210,000. There's a book published by Brandeis State University, which is called, I can't think of it now.
That's okay. That's okay.
It only 210,000 people in the United States spearheaded the American Revolution, and they were the Puritans and the Pilgrims and the Scotch-Irish Presbyterian people of the Upper Shenandoah Valley where I live here today.
Do you think that we can successfully do that again, Eustace?
Well, I don't see any of those groups operating today. The Puritans and the Pilgrims and the Scotch-Irish Presbyterians are out of the picture.
It's going to be mostly just capitulation then.
Well,
Through starvation.
Well, through starvation and government force, intimidation.
They'll just throw the towel in.
Well, I hope they won't throw in the towel, but I'm afraid they will.
I'm afraid you're right, Eustace, because I've been studying this and talking to people in the poll I've taken personally.
Really?
Is that they're all done. They're ready. They want pizza and beer. And the hell with everything else. You know, that's the way they look at it.
Largely, that's true. That's true, my friend. But thankfully, we have a sizable minority of people that are dusting off their muskets. I'm afraid that's true also.
Well, Rick, I hope you're right.
I hope so, too.
I hope you're not fantasizing, man.
No, I try not to. But, you know, I have faith, and I know ultimately we're going to win. So I'm not going to entertain anyone.
Oh, you have faith, because I'm always with you.
The end of the book says we win.
That's right. And we win no matter what, because the forces of Satan are on right now. They are running for cover, believe me.
That's good.
And they ain't seen nothing yet, because when the judgment hits, it's going to be all over.
Oh,
thank
boy.
You very much, Tom, for your call.
You bet.
All right. Ed in Texas. Let's see if we can squeeze you in before the break. Hi, Ed.
Whoop.
Hello, Ed. Is that you? Hi,
yeah,
you're on the program with Eustace.
Yeah, that's me. I'll take exception to the last caller, Tom. If we have 1% of the population that's armed and angry, that's 3 million people who are armed and angry. Are you hearing me?
Yeah. And by the way, that's a very low number. I know that is a very low number, my friend.
Only 1%.
That's
3
right.
million. Now, what I called about it, I just took exception to his remarks.
Sure. But you had called for another reason.
Yes.
What was it?
Something that's happening locally and currently is the aircraft that fly over our little bitty town of 300 or 400 people out in southwest Texas, way out in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
Every morning, there is one B-1 bomber that flies over. And I, you know, for the last year or so, I watched this and I say, well, that's a training flight. Well, now we got 2 or 3 every day. And then one day last week, there was a B-52 flew over. Now, I can recognize them because I'm an old military guy. I, you know, 50 years ago, I was in the military. And then one day, I think about Thursday or Friday last week, in 1 hour, there were 6 fighter jets flying And what they're doing, they're flying a path that goes down south-southeast along the Rio Grande, 30 miles north of it, where I am. I'm 30 miles north of Rio Grande.
Mm-hmm.
And then last Saturday, I believe it was, maybe Friday, here comes a Huey from back, you know, in Vietnam era, painted white with a light blue stripe on it. And I looked at it and I said, well, that's strange. Oh, there goes the break.
Why don't you hang on, all right?
Okay.
I'll let you continue when we come back, Ed. Eustace, can you stay?
Oh, yes.
Good for you. All right, we got a lot of calls. All right, we'll be back. I'm Rick Adams, and we'll be back in just 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Rick Adams is back.
Radio Avenger, the Paul Revere of talk radio.
We'll forgive you till the next break. You should be playing the country. Okay, at least you put me back. We're back on the air, ladies and gentlemen. Ed, you're still there with me and Eustace?
Right, okay.
Okay, now what else did you want to say about these planes?
Okay, I want to fill in on this white chopper with a blue UN stripe on it.
Uh-huh.
I didn't recognize it being UN because the only thing I've ever seen UN had big black letters UN on the side of a truck. Anyway, my son was out there, and he just fulfilled his 8.5+ years that they extended him military service, and he looked up and he said, Daddy, get my gun. I said, what? That's a UN helicopter. I said, well, son, we ain't going to try to shoot him down here in town.
Mm-hmm.
And it flew in hot, and it went over, and we got a Border Patrol station about a mile from the house.
Yeah.
And I watched it slowed down and lowered and lowered and lowered, and then I got busy, and I'm pretty sure that sucker landed at the Border Patrol station.
You didn't get any video of this, did you?
No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even have a video camera.
Well, you should get one anyway.
I know.
And you should be ready and armed and, be able to get all this evidence.
I'm one of those guys that the worst day of my life was January the 1st of 2000 when every computer in the world did not crash.
I understand, but it wouldn't be surprising, though, Eustace, would it, what he just described?
Oh, yes. That wouldn't be surprising at all, because we get all of the jet fighters from Washington flying over this house all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's less than an hour's flight from Washington right here.
Well, I just want to fill you all in on current events here out in the far southwest Texas desert, and I wish Eustace God's will and whatever his endeavors are.
Amen. Thank you for that report, Ed. We appreciate that. Call
again. Yeah, that's a very good report.
You bet.
You know, Eustace, before we move along, you have some interesting historical figures in Virginia, and one of them, I guess, was John Randolph. Randolph.
Right? Oh, he was an ancestor of mine.
Yes, John Randolph of Roanoke.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he was quite a patriot.
He was a fighter.
He was.
He was in the great Virginia tradition.
In fact,
you know, his name is never mentioned in Virginia today.
Uh-huh. I think he made Patrick Henry wobble a little bit. From what I've read of him and by him, he is quite a prolific. He was an incredible figure. So he was one of your ancestors, huh?
Oh, yes.
That is fascinating. Fascinating
man.
Well,
you know, there were only a few families in Virginia in those days. We were all related.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah. Well, you have the fighting Scotch and especially the Scotsmen.
Scotch-Irish Presbyterians. They would plug the Revolutionary War. There would never have been a revolution without them.
Oh, the fighting Scotsman, you know, Patton again. Here we go. All right, let's take another call from, is it Alma in Nebraska? Alma? Hi, you're on the program.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Great program.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Say, listen, I have... I listen to so many different Patriot programs, and I'm comparing it with the Bible. I'm going through it for the 10th time.
Uh-huh.
And my only thing about going up against a government, and I don't profess to know it all either. I just, into eternity, will still be learning the Bible.
Sure.
But listen, the recurring thing from cover to cover is this, is repentance.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's preaching it.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when Joshua and all the leaders had wanted to go up to war?
Yes.
And they would ask the Lord, should we go up? And my point is this, is that when Joshua lost the war and he cried to the Lord said, get up, stand up like a man, brush yourself off, and clean that garbage out that's in your own camp. Now, we have written into our laws all kinds of things that are directly a slap in the face,
mm-hmm.
As far as God's laws are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And my thing is this, is that, you know, if you don't even believe in the Bible, think about physics and chemistry and biology. If you have a project and you want to sterilize it, you can't go in and sterilize it with dirty hands.
Yes.
And so my point is this. My point is that we have got to consistently ask the king to repent and have his nation to repent. We've got to clean up our own act. We've got people out there that are calling themselves patriots, that are involved in all kinds of things that are not godly. You can't go up against the government with hands like that. And so I'm asking for some response to that.
Oh, I've been talking about that for a long time. If you've listened to me very long, I don't know, but I've made that one of the main themes of this program. You've got to check the rafters. You know, you've got to also check the beams, the foundation of your house. And if something's eating away at it, you better take care of it before you try to before you try to last on that floor, because you're not going to. I agree. That's what the scripture says, to repent and come clean. But see, we live in a proud time when people are too heady and high-minded, and people have to learn the hard way, unfortunately. God has to chastise them and punish them. That's my take on it. Eustace, you might have something to say about that.
Well, I agree with you. You've got to know what's going on in your own house before you can do anything about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we say what you just said is absolutely true, Alma, and it is important that people understand that God is turning his back on those that don't do what they know is right in their hearts, refuse to do the right thing. They're turning their back on him first. So he has to oblige them. You reap the whirlwind when you sow the wind, you see. That's what it's all about. This country has to repent. And we have to get back to basics before we can save anything, because there isn't going to be much worth saving.
Yeah, yes, sir, I agree with you 100%. And instead of having a national day of prayer, I'm just asking for a national day of repentance.
Right, right.
Prayer does us no good without repentance.
No, anyway, you're right.
I listen to your show a lot, and I like that guy named Joe, too, and your guest you have tonight.
All right. Okay, well, we thank you for that, Alma. I really am glad you called tonight. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good points from the scriptures. Eustace, we are very grateful to have such thought-provoking listeners to the program.
Oh, that means everything.
It does. I'm very happy with it. And whether you agree or disagree with everything, that's fine. We're listening to all points of view. Barney in Maryland now. We're going to listen to you, Barney. Hi.
Yeah, how you doing?
All right.
I wondered if either one of you remembered Mary Davison.
Oh, Mary Davison's a great woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's well remembered. Believe me, she was a fighter.
Yeah, but she came across a plan where she always had two people at the UN every time it was in session.
Yep.
And she came across a plan where the One World is wanting to use United States forces to invade South Africa. And she had a number of ships, planes, troops, casualties, and everything. And she put out a plea to her subscribers, to her newsletter, to send in donations, and she put it in the leading newspapers in the country and squashed it. Remember that?
That I don't recall, that particular episode, but I'm happy she did.
Well, anyway,
I'm very grateful for that.
Well, what I was thinking about, I just read in the June issue of the Idaho Observer about the 911 Truth Organization from Los Angeles electing and convening a grand jury on the crime of 911. Did you get that?
No, I didn't get that issue. I was reading some other publications this particular week, but I didn't read that story. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, the thing is, they are trying them, and they really doing a good job,
mm-hmm.
according to the article. And I was thinking, if we could get somebody to collect donations to put that in all the leading newspapers around the country, mm-hmm. it could have a big effect on everything coming
yeah.
down.
Did you catch the professor the other night from Wisconsin on Hannity and Combs about Bush and 9/11 being an inside job? I wonder if anybody caught that.
No, I missed that.
I heard discussion, but I did not catch it, so I was wondering if somebody out there listening right now probably did catch that, and I can imagine the treatment that he received. But more and more people are now coming forward with obviously a doubt, severe doubt, and that's putting it mildly, of the government's conspiracy theory on 9/11, and that's good. More and more people are questioning it. And these people now are really, I think, in a quandary as to what to do. Can we pull another 9/11? Can we do an India bombing like just happened? Can we do something like the Brits have had? Or is it going to be counterproductive? Because, see, George Bush is himself in a corner now.
Oh, he is deliberately.
Well, he's left the borders wide open. So if anything happens, and it is suspicious that somebody came across the border at the very least, George Bush has to be held responsible for it personally.
Oh, yes. And, you know, I hear it every day that Bush is going to pull something, but I say it's too risky.
I believe so. I believe so, too. That's the reason they haven't done it. Yeah.
There is so much protest movement in New York City. I have a lot of friends in New York, and they tell me that every day in New York City they have mass demonstrations about 9/11
mm-hmm.
because they really suffered from it there.
And they know
the government. What's going on in New York City.
They have shown in the polls they do not believe anything the government says by a pretty good majority.
Oh, yes, that's absolutely true.
And why should they? I mean, only a fool would really sit down and say, yeah, we've analyzed what the government said and not come away saying the whole thing is a contradiction. They contradict themselves from paragraph to paragraph.
Everything that happened contradicts itself.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
if you were Ed in Manhattan on that day, I'm sure that you know the story is totally phony.
Mm-hmm.
Because my friends in New York tell me constantly that that's all they talk about up there.
Sure, sure. Barney,
yeah.
are you still there? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's a great opening. And one place where we really hit them, and if you would read that article in Idaho Observer, and maybe we'd get something going on it.
Well, that would be fine. We'll see if we can have my producer set something up.
You know,
see if we can do something. Sure.
Yeah, they got the if necessary, we could get the group. It's the Idaho Truth Organization.
Mm-hmm.
It's a truth organization
mm-hmm.
from Los Angeles.
Right.
And if we could get them or the Idaho Observer to lead the fight, or you, why we might get something going.
Yeah. Well, whatever we can do, we'll do. Whatever people are willing to contribute to as well. People have to get on board and do something and not just talk, that's for sure.
Well,
I'd be happy
really
to
have,
go, I'd be happy
people,
to help out.
There are thousands of people in New York that know that 9/11 is phony. They were there.
They
don't forget it.
They might even contribute.
Well, they would.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a very good thought, Barney. Thank you very much for that. And let's see if we can do something with the people at the Idaho Observer, okay? All right, thank you very much. Douglas in Texas, I think. You're next on the program.
Yeah, hi, Rick.
Hi.
Hi, Eustace.
Hi.
Eustace, you know, the investigation of this is not being, it's not forthcoming. There's nothing going. People have tried to, you know, sue, get in court, get discovery, get something to expose the lies of the government. But we have Mr. Hellerstein, Alvin K. Hellerstein, and we have Michael Chertoff.
Oh, yes.
And we have Ms. Birnbaum that's passing out all the money. And it's a little circuit there. You know, you go, you can't get justice in this court. Just go down and get a payoff from the government. So don't you see a pattern there?
Oh, yes.
A little bitty pattern?
Oh, mm-hmm. There is a pattern. Oh, yes.
Okay, well, I just wanted, I was doing a sanity check on myself.
All right, that's a good way of putting it. We get the message. Thank you, Doug. All right, let's talk to Jim now in Texas. Hi, Jim.
Okay, Jim here in Fredericksburg, Texas.
All right. Hi.
Okay, just west of the Owen Austin here. Just a brief line on the revolution and a couple brief lines on the military. Mr. Mullins, you mentioned the Puritans and the Presbyterians and the Scots-Irish, of which I'm one quarter. You failed to mention the fact that I have a book, actually, with the reproduction of a painting of Pastor Muhlenberg removing his preacher's gown in the pulpit to display the uniform of an officer in the Continental Army, and he raised, though, a battalion or a regiment or something of German Lutherans to fight in the Reformation. So, Reformation in the Revolution. So, hey, perhaps in future credits you might include us. Are you
all
there?
Right.
Oh, there are a lot of people participated in that revolution.
Sure, yeah.
Well,
I think in the north end of the Shenandoah Valley there, where you are, there were probably large settlements of Germans, and along with the Scots-Irish.
There were a lot of Germans?
Yeah.
Well, you know, during World War One and World War Two, they said that 52% of the American population was of German origin.
Uh-huh.
See, all the Hessians settled here after the Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure.
And that's Pennsylvania and Virginia is where most of them were.
And then the 1812 war as well.
Oh, yeah.
I have nothing against Presbyterians, of course, because in 1951 I was 11 years old, and a lovely lady by the name of Mrs. George Tullidge took me to a Presbyterian Sunday school, even though I was Lutheran. For the 3 years I spent in the junior school at Stanton Military Academy, she had me in her class at the Presbyterian Church there. When I got up to the hill in the ninth grade, of course, I went to the Lutheran church squad. But when I graduated in 58, I had been there longer than any cadet on the hill, and that leads me to Mary Baldwin.
Oh, yes.
They have taken over.
That's the girls' school now.
That's the girls' college in Stanton, Virginia. And they've taken over our old campus.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the alumni wrote in the newsletter a few years back when we were still trying to reestablish the academy. When we were cadets there, we dreamed about getting some Mary Baldwin girls into the barracks. Now we can't get them out. Anyhow, what is your feeling? The Alumni Association now is contributing thousands of dollars to their ROTC program. They have girls marching around in uniforms and things, and I wonder if they march into town Sunday mornings in church squads the way we used to.
I don't think they do. I've never seen them marching.
But I'm curious about your take on women in the military, positive, negative, even what effect might it have on our society.
Well, I served through World War II and there in the U.S. Armed Forces. Of course, there were no women in the military at that.
Well, we had the WACs.
We had the WACs, but
right.
I never saw but a few of them.
Yeah.
I was only at one air base where I ever saw any WACs, so they were all colored women.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, I served in the 60s, and, of course, that was before the integration, so to speak, the gender integration.
Oh, yes.
But
right.
I can't imagine taking orders from a cute little lieutenant.
Okay. All right, Jim. We'll stop at that point. We'll be back to wrap things up with Eustace Mullins. I'm Rick Adams, and we shall return in 3 minutes.
The New World Order thought police are on the run because Rick Adams is back on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Yes, indeed, we are. We're back with Eustace Mullins to round out the program now. This is Rick Adams, and we've had quite an interesting evening tonight, Eustace.
Oh, this has been a very good evening.
We haven't even touched on all these other issues. We haven't talked about the current state of world affairs. We haven't talked about North Korea and its leader, Kim Jong-un. Forget it.
Well, you know, everybody asked me about North Korea and Israel's invasion of Palestine. And I say these are simply moves to keep up the price of gas.
Yeah. Well, they're doing it, aren't they?
Well, they're doing it.
They're
it's
doing
working
it.
Working beautifully, I would say. It's a great operation.
Kim Jong-il is, you know, they refer to the madman there that he is, and yet, you know, I was just reading this AP report that came down the wire, which talks about the professor in Israel who says that, as far as he's concerned, that they have the power right now to strike just about every capital city in Europe and destroy them with their nuclear armaments. This is what they have said, and as a so-called avenge for the Holocaust, as they put it. You know,
that would be perfect.
You know, they're talking about Iran's so-called mad leaders, but yet what could be more mad and sadistic and satanic than what this professor who has come out and made this statement could possibly be more insane than what Professor Martin Van Creevel has said.
And
that's what he said. I mean, it's in print. It's in writing, and the AP picked up on it as well. He's a professor of military history at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem.
Oh, yeah, and he represents the elite in Tel Aviv.
Yeah, so, I mean, if we ever had a threat, a serious threat to the world that emanates from the Middle East, it isn't Iran, it was not Iraq,
Iran
it's Israel.
They no threats at all.
Yeah, and here we've got our so-called good little democratic ally, Israel, making these kinds of outward and open threats.
Well, the rest of the world knows what to expect from Israel. There's no illusions in Europe about what Israel's going to do. That's why Germany and France refused to support our Iraq adventure.
Yeah, in fact,
they've seen it all. They know what's coming.
One of the French diplomats there, as you know, made the statement. He referred to Israel as that blankety little country with the S word in it.
Oh, yes.
Yes, indeed. I thought you might recall that statement.
Oh, I remember that, yes.
And
that was very nice.
The diplomatic fallout from that, you know, it was like another Holocaust. But he had the castañas to make the statement, and I said that we need, wouldn't it be nice if some of our leaders, so-called leaders, would stand up and take the stand they should stand. They should take against all injustice.
Well, it'd be nice if one of them would.
Yeah. I don't see any, though.
No,
I don't hear any.
Not at the cars.
If people do wish to contact you now, what is the best way to do that, Eustace Mullins?
Just write me at 126 Madison Place, Stanton, and it'll get right through to me.
126 Madison Place in Stanton, Virginia, right?
Yeah. And they can call me also at 886-5580.
All right, give that number one more time.
540-886-5580.
All right.
I've got some of my books for sale here.
Good for you. All right. Go to it, ladies and gentlemen. Eustace, bless you again. We'll talk again, God willing. God keep you.
Oh, yes, indeed. I hope so. I'll be right here.
Amen. Great program. Thank you, Eustace.
Very good.
Good night now. And good night, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back, God willing,
good night.
Tomorrow night at 9 o'clock Central Time, 10 Eastern, 7 West Coast. Rick Adams, Radio Avenger. Good night to all of you. God bless.